On the previous edition of the Gruick Report podcast, breaking news.
Oh, here, Steve, we have some breaking news.
Do we?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Impact Wrestling, TNA, has just announced that they will be heading to Destination America. All right. The official press release.
I'm sorry, what?
The official press release says Discovery Communications acquires exclusive broadcast rights to Top Professional Wrestling League.
Top?
Yeah. Discovery Communications announced today that it has signed a multi-year deal with TNA, Total Nonstop Action, Impact Wrestling, to bring the popular league to homes nationwide on Destination America, the only network dedicated to celebrating the people, places, and stories of the United States. Destination America officially enters the ring with its first world premiere of Impact Wrestling in January 2015. The series features some of the biggest names in professional wrestling, including Jeff Hardy, Bobby Roode, Kurt Angle, Bobby Lashley, and Gail Kim. The partnership includes the U.S. premieres of additional TNA wrestling series and specials and provides Discovery Communications with international broadcasting rights in select regions to be announced at a later date.
Woo! Boy, that's incredible. Top wrestling league with top wrestling talent.
Right.
I can hardly wait. You know, I don't have cable, so I can't. Is it on DirecTV? Is it on?
I don't have it
on Dish.
I don't believe that we have it here on Charter. So, sorry, Dixie. No chance. So that's what you got. Up against a machine too strong.
Monday, November the 24th, 2014. I am Steve Gerwick of Gerwick.net. That's GERWECK.net. I want to welcome you to another edition of the Gerwick Report podcast. And as always, I'm joined along with my longtime tag team partner, Frank D.
What's going on, everybody out there? We got a lot of things to talk about today to get into. But the first thing I want to say right now is, in case you have not done it yet, go over to YouTube.com, check out the official Gerwick Report podcast, the GRP YouTube channel right now. Subscribe, like the videos, and also join our Facebook discussion group at Gerwick Report Podcast at Facebook.com. Check us out.
You know, last night, Frank, was a pay-per-view. I don't know if you were aware of that. Last night was a Survivor Series, and we touched on a little bit on a previous edition of our podcast that neither one of us was very excited about this particular pay-per-view. It was for free. If you signed up for the WWE Network, it used to be Survivor Series was traditionally a main player in the pay-per-view business, but over the years it's lost a lot of its luster. I was not excited for it. I saw you put up some threads on our discussion group at Facebook, which you can follow us there at Gerwick Report Podcast on Facebook. Really was not feeling this pay-per-view. And then over the weekend, the story broke that Sting would make his official WWE in-ring debut on the Survivor Series show. So all of a sudden, now I've got a little bit of interest, just a little bit, to see what they're going to, you know, how they're going to pull this off. So last night, I did not see the show. So if you would come on to the GRP today and expect Frank D and I to sit down and talk in depth, match by match, about Survivor Series, then I don't know what to tell you today, because it's not going to happen. Because I didn't really see the show. Frank really didn't see the show. It was for free. It was on, but we really didn't watch it. But I was at least interested to see what they do with the Stinger. So it's 10 o'clock or so, and I haven't seen Sting. I'm following the results at Gerwick.net and the report going on, and not really digging the show, what I'm reading so far, but I still want to see what's going on with Sting. So I watched the main event, Frank, and on all honestly, the main event does nothing for me. The Big Show turned for how many times now? How many times has he turned in his career? I just want to see what they do with Sting. At the very end of the show, Sting's music plays, the Titantron lights up, goes dark, very wet, sweaty, Triple H is in the ring. And Frank, this was one of the best moments I remember in professional wrestling, sports entertainment in a long time. Finally, after months, you and I have been talking about this for months on this podcast. Finally, the Stinger enters a WWE ring. It was history in the making, and what a moment. The place went berserk, and as Frank D would say, if you didn't feel that last night, if you didn't appreciate that last night, if you didn't really mark out for that last night, you're just not a wrestling fan.
Yeah, you're not. If you didn't, you know, feel what I felt and the electricity, and I don't feel those type of moments anymore when it comes to anything that has to do with this business. I don't feel that way. And last night when I saw the lights dim and I saw the Titantron, I knew what it was. And when that guy Sting came walking out there, and here's a guy that stayed in the WCW pretty much his entire career, went to TNA, has never done anything with the WWE, and all of a sudden this guy is out there last night face to face with Triple H. And you can see Triple H felt it last night. The fans in St. Louis felt it. It was one of those monumental things where you're kind of like, whoa, did this really happen? Well, it happened last night. And to see him out there and to do the Scorpion Death Drop on Triple H was something I never thought I would see. And just to hear the reaction of the fans, and the fans really get behind and show this guy the respect that he deserves, I was very happy with it. And like Steve mentioned earlier, if you thought that you were going to come on to GRP today and listen to the show and you're going to get an in-depth review of Survivor Series, very sorry. It's not going to happen today. I was out doing stuff last night. My main thing, you know, when I got in the house was to look at Survivor Series on demand, which I did. I fast-forwarded all the way up to 2 hours and 48 minutes, and booyah, that's the part where Sting comes out. So other than that, I mean, there was other things that happened. I'll probably go back and look at it in a couple of days or something, or just hear about what happened on Raw tonight, but I have no interest in the Survivor Series other than Sting's debut. And it's fitting, Steve, that Sting would debut at the Survivor Series because the man that he wants to wrestle debuted at Survivor Series 1990, which was The Undertaker.
Over the weekend, it broke that Sting was going to be there, and there was reports that he was going to debut, you know, before or after the Divas elimination match, and then that didn't happen. There was reports that Sting is gearing up for a match with The Undertaker, or they would start setting that up. Of course, last night, there was no Undertaker in the building, so they were not going to tease that. But last night, they definitely did tease that maybe for the first time ever, we could possibly get Sting versus Triple H. Now, earlier, they definitely teased The Rock versus Triple H. So we've got a lot of things to unfold. Maybe they don't know exactly what's penciled in for WrestleMania at this point. But honestly, I would rather see, and this is just, you know, Steve Gerwick talking today, I'd rather see Sting and Undertaker, we finally get that match. And I'd rather see The Rock take on Brock. But, of course, it looks like to me, Frank, that Triple H is itching to get back in that ring. And so he's going to have a high-profile match at WrestleMania somehow.
If you can't get the match with Taker at WrestleMania, which I'm pretty sure, okay, by the crowd reaction that Sting got last night, we're going to try to pull that off. Maybe he can go. If you can't do it, I'm okay with Triple H versus Sting at Mania. Because I know that Triple H is gonna do all he can to make sure that Sting looks good. I mean, look what he did last night with the Scorpion Death Drop. So he's gonna make sure that Sting looks really good there. And if you can't get, say you can do the match with Taker and Sting at WrestleMania, you can actually have Sting out there maybe in August at SummerSlam to do him versus Trips. But the way it was last night, though, if I had to put my money on it, Either we're going to see Triple H and Sting at WrestleMania, or we could definitely see it at the Royal Rumble.
I agree with you, Frank. If they can't do Sting and Undertaker at WrestleMania, if Undertaker, I mean, a lot of reports out there that he's really banged up, he's not feeling real good. I know he's kind of shot a lot of those down, and he showed up at University of Texas football game. Looked okay to me, but again, I don't know how he's feeling inside. Only person that really knows how Undertaker feels is the Undertaker, is Mark Calloway. Okay, so we don't know. But if he can wrestle, and the streak is over now, there is no WrestleMania streak on the line at WrestleMania 31. So that's out the window. But if you do the dream match, you finally get Undertaker versus Sting, then suddenly WrestleMania has a marquee match. But I agree with you, Frank. If they can't get Undertaker, if Undertaker's not going to wrestle at this WrestleMania, he's not physically able to go, I'm perfectly happy with Sting versus Triple H because, as I was trying to ask you offline, you know, did they ever touch before? Did they ever wrestle in WCW when Triple H was in WCW? I don't remember it. You don't remember it. So if we do get Sting versus Triple H, at least it'll be a dream match that we've never seen before, and it gives it probably the main event going into WrestleMania for 31.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely agree with that because we need something. The streak was ended. So we need something that's gonna create some type of a dynamic there of excitement. And unfortunately, we don't have that right now. Sting coming in was a perfect thing, the perfect catalyst of getting something going here, of getting people to talk, of moving tickets. And just building upon the fact that last night was the first time that Sting ever took a bump in a WWE ring was a huge deal.
I guess the other potential dream match that I was just thinking of as we're talking here would be Sting versus The Rock.
Yeah, but to me, honestly, that doesn't do anything for me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that doesn't do anything for me. I am much more along the lines of seeing Sting versus Taker or Sting versus Triple H, because Sting versus Rock is just that right there doesn't work for me because. It's I don't know, something about that is just not appealing to me. I don't know what it is right now. Maybe on the next podcast or maybe offline I'll tell you. But right now I don't feel that match.
Okay, that's a dream match. I mean, we're sitting here and we're talking about how about this guy versus this guy, this guy versus this guy. It's something we've never seen before. And you know, now in WWE everything is so watered down. John Cena's wrestled everybody, Randy Orton's wrestled everybody. So you bring in somebody like Sting who's brand new to the company. I mean, it's hard to believe I'm sitting here. He's 50-something years old, Frank. He went through WCW, he went through TNA. He's done pretty much everything in this business except show up in a WWE ring, physically be in a WWE ring. And I think this will be one of the most memorable moments we've seen in wrestling in a long time. And the real question is, you know, where do they go from here now? Because if you're going to do this, let's say they're going to do trips against Sting. They have got several months to build that up. So I don't think they're going to do Triple H versus Sting at Royal Rumble. So you're probably going to save that match for WrestleMania. So then you have months to build it up. It's a little early. It's only November here. And the question is, as we do this podcast, does he show up on Raw tonight? I think you have to do something with Sting tonight because he was there last night and it's got the internet buzzing about Sting, and we've got to show Sting on Raw for the very first time. That'll be another very memorable moment. Sting makes his Raw debut possibly tonight on Monday Night Raw. The question is going forward with Sting is where do you go with him and how do you hold off Triple H versus Sting? Because last night, we didn't really watch the show, but of course the storyline is that Sting cost Team Authority their match, thus Team Authority is out of power now. So I guess that means, Frank, that Triple H and Stephanie may have to apply for a job in TNA.
Well, you know, the whole storyline is just so retarded to me because, number one, they have the big, slow knockout Cena with one of the weakest punches I've ever seen. I mean, the whole punch was as stupid as that Roman Reigns Superman punch. But anyways, they had him go out there and do that in turn for the millionth time. I guess it's going to be him versus Cena. And if, in reality, if you know, he turned because he felt the Authority storyline purposes only here, people. If Big Show turned because he had all his, you know, money on the Authority and the power that they have, Well, it's kind of dumb because the authority has no power now. So the Big Show heel turn was done for nothing. And now that Sting, you know, has cost the authority their power, yeah, you got to have something to play into tonight's show. Are we going to play like it never happened? So I think that Sting is going to be out there tonight, and I think they'll probably save Sting for the last segment. I would think they wouldn't bring Sting out there at the beginning of the night. I mean, that would be stupid. You need to have the fans linger on the entire show. You got to have the fans really start, you know, getting them excited and amped up. There, oh, maybe Sting is going to show up, and then Sting comes out there at the end. Now, one thing that I would have done differently last night, you and I were talking about this offline, was when Sting came out there last night, I would have had Sting have his baseball bat and pointed at Triple H and do some stuff like that and start whooping ass with that bat. That's what I would have done. So maybe tonight we'll see Sting come out there with his trademark baseball bat.
Well, I think it's very possible, you know, knowing the history of Sting, a lot of times he doesn't say anything, is to show him on TV for a few different episodes and then maybe build up to say, he, you know, Sting breaks his silence, and he's finally going to speak now. He's going to cut his very first promo in a WWE ring, and Sting is going to explain, you know, why did you interfere in this match? Where are you going with your character? What's in your future? So I think that's the way to go with him, is to show him a little bit and little bits of pieces. Definitely I wouldn't put him out in the first segment at all, because you got to think the first time you come out with Trips and you come out with Stephanie, and they come out there and cry and complain, right? That's going to be their opening segment of Raw. But then you could say Sting makes an appearance tonight. Tune in, you know, later in the show, because typically when you watch the rating cycle, there's not much going on between 8 and 9 o'clock.
Right.
So there's no point putting Sting on in the first hour. So you build it up that Sting may make an appearance tonight. Tune in at 10:30, 10:45. Maybe he's the main event segment in the 11 o'clock overrun. But definitely build up that, you know, Sting is in the house tonight. Sting is going to make an appearance. But I think, Frank, short term, I would show Sting, just show Sting on occasion, and then maybe 3, 4, 5 weeks from now, maybe a month from now, say, you know, Sting breaks his silence exclusively on Raw. Tune in tonight to see what Sting has to say. And then that could start the wheels in motion of wherever direction they're going to go. I would think right now it's at least Triple H versus Sting. But, you know, Undertaker gets back into it, and maybe they go a different direction.
Yeah, I don't think that Sting should be out there on a weekly basis.
I don't either.
Sting is a special attraction, so let's keep Sting as a special attraction. Sting is he has to come out there tonight and say something about why he did what he did. Because from storyline purposes, it makes no sense. He hasn't been involved in anything with WWE since the 2K video game panel back in August. So all of a sudden now the man called Sting shows up at Survivor Series. He cost the authority the match. He's face-to-face with Trips. So obviously he has an issue with Triple H about something. So what is it? That's the question that needs to be answered. So if they build that correctly and they have him come out at the, you know, in the overrun tonight and do something, that's what, you know, built the whole show around. We know Sting is here. Sting will talk tonight on Monday Night Raw. This is a must-see show. That's how you do it. Because we already know the rest of the show is going to suck. We know that, you know, we know that how it's going to start. It should not start off with Triple H and Stephanie coming out and talking about, you know, whining and crying on TV. They shouldn't even be allowed to do it. They're out of power, right? So we know they're going to start the show off that way, but it shouldn't start that way. It honestly should start off with John Cena and Team Cena. Because they're the victors. And I think they should say, we owed all to one man last night, and that man is Sting. Because if it hadn't been for that, Dolph Ziggler would have got beat. But then also, you got to put over Ziggler tonight in a big way, because Ziggler was the sole survivor.
Yeah, that's a good point. To sell that the authority is truly out of power, maybe they're not on the show tonight.
I would think that, I mean, that's what you have to do. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to have Triple H come out with the King of Kings music playing? Okay, so now you're no longer in power, but yet you still have the same interests and you're still walking out and you still got corporate Kane and all these guys with you. I mean, I thought last night, I mean, the authority has no power, but in reality, they never said that the authority wasn't still a faction. They just said that they have no power.
Yeah, what does that mean? Because we all know the smart people know, smart fans out there know that Triple H has a executive position and Stephanie is Vince's daughter. So, you know, I was being facetious saying, I guess they have to apply for jobs in TNA, but I mean, they want you to believe they are truly out of power. So you have to sell that some way. And I think that's a good point. If they're out of power, they shouldn't have the opening segment on Raw.
Right. Well, if they're out of power, if you want to do it correctly and not screw it up like you did CM Punk in 2011 when Punk left and then Punk came back that night on Raw, which I still say is what killed that whole thing they were trying to do. When CM Punk came back and he had Colt's personality plan and he came through the Raw set and he had on his wrestling gear, I would have had Punk come out as kind of like an outsider coming through the crowd. Well, why not go a little bit further tonight with Stephanie and Triple H? Let's film some stuff at the offices. Let's show Triple H's, office being, all the stuff being taken out of his office or something like that. Really show him being removed from power. Not just from storyline purposes. Let's really go a little bit deeper. Because people like me, people like Steve, people like all the rest of the people out there that are smart to the business know, it's a bunch of BS.
Yeah, them just crying at the end of Survivor Series doesn't sell it for me at all.
Yeah, it doesn't for me either. I mean, the only thing that was positive was Sting and was Triple H. That was it.
Now, let me interject something right here because there's a lot of reports online, Frank, about Brock Lesnar's future. And Brock Lesnar, of course, is the WWE champion. Some people are very, we agree that Brock Lesnar is the most credible guy they have to be their champion. But at the same time, Brock Lesnar's a part-time wrestler. There's a lot of weeks you don't see him on Raw, which is good, I think. It keeps him fresh. He's not on Raw every single week. But somebody like Seth Rollins, who's got the Money in the Bank, he really can't cash it in because the champion's not there.
Right.
So I know people will start – I can already see it, Frank, in the future as we move forward here. People are going to say, well, now WWE has another part-time wrestler. You've got Sting. You've got Chris Jericho, you got RVD. These are part-time wrestlers. They come and they go, and it takes away from the regular roster. Now, I agree. It keeps them fresh and a special attraction, but I can already people saying, well, look, now you got another part-time wrestler with Sting. But, I mean, honestly, Frank, do WrestleMania, maybe do Undertaker Sting at WrestleMania, do Sting Triple H at SummerSlam. I could see building up as a number two pay-per-view, but other than that, Frank, I can't really think that Sting is going to wrestle very much. You know, maybe one match, maybe two match tops, and then I think that's it for Sting.
Yeah, I think Sting will move into an ambassador role. Sting will probably do some things with the network. I mean, you have the guy here. Okay, let's do some network stuff with Sting. You have the entire WCW category, or catalog there, I should say. Why not do something with the Stinger? You have him there. You have the face of WCW there. This time you Sting and utilize him in a way that you can utilize what you were supposed to do with Ultimate Warrior. Unfortunately, Warrior passed. But you can start doing the same thing with Sting. I only think Sting is going to be there, like you said, for a handful of matches, and that's pretty much it. I mean, Sting has to be that guy that's a special attraction. You know, you can't bring him out there every single week. You can't have him on this show and have him on that show or whatever. You can't do it. As far as Brock Lesnar goes, there's rumors going around that Lesnar possibly going to go back to UFC at some point. I'm pretty much thinking he's going to go there, and a lot of it is due to business. I think that Brock could probably get a lot more money at UFC right now. The fact that WWE has moved the pay-per-views over to the network, we don't really know how that pay structure works, and Brock could really get a big percentage of the UFC buy rate. So I think that's what's going to get him to go there. Right now, though, in my opinion, Brock Lesnar is the most legitimate guy you have in the entire Federation. But the problem is that he is also the WWE World Heavyweight Champion and hasn't defended that championship since September. So that's a big problem for a lot of people. It's a big problem for me as well. You have a guy there, Seth Rollins, who's the Money in the Bank. But like you said, he can't cash it in. You have no world champion right now to be the leader of the company. You just don't have it. So I don't know what they're going to do. You mentioned their part-time wrestlers. Well, you know what? You need these part-time wrestlers there to get over the wrestlers that are out there every single week and then are not getting over with the crowd. I think looking at it right now that here's a tag team. I'm going to use an example here, and this is just truly how I feel about it. I think the Usos at this point are very exposed, and it's to the point now where the Usos, well, honestly, they suck. And it's not so much that they suck as far as in-ring competitors. They suck simply because we see them too much. And it's the same matches with the Dust Brothers or Los Matadores. I mean, the tag team division sucks. And the Usos are paying the price for not having, you know, regular fresh opponents.
You know, I want to be clear. I'm not down on part-time wrestlers at all. I'm just saying that's what people are saying out there.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying, well, how can you have a part-time champion because he's only there part of the time? And I agree, if Brock has not defended the title since September, and here we are in November, the end of November, we've got Survivor Series, which is supposed to be one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year, and you have no Brock Lesnar. You have no world title match. I mean, that is a problem.
Yeah.
And I understand where people complain about that, but in general, in terms of part-time wrestlers, you know, if you can still work with RVD, if you can still work with Chris Jericho, if you can still, I mean, I still would be in favor of getting Kurt Angle in as a part-time wrestler.
Yeah.
You know, he comes, he goes, he's not there every week. The problem with so many of the guys on their rosters, they're on every single week, they're on every single show, they're on Raw and SmackDown, so they, you know, they come, they go, and then they come back, they're fresh again. People saying, oh, when's Jericho coming back? When's RVD coming back? When's Sting going to make a next appearance? It's something that I think freshens up your product. In terms of Brock here, and I totally agree with what you were saying there, WWE may have put themselves in a bind with negotiating with Brock Lesnar, with their pay-per-view business moving to the network, and there's only, what cable is the only thing left now? Satellite is gone from the pay-per-view business. For WWE, that you've cut, you probably put yourself in a spot where you can't bid. You know, WWE is number one sports entertainment, whatever, and you know they may not have the money to compete with UFC. And we've seen UFC buy rates go down a little bit, but they can still offer Brock Lesnar a piece of the gate. They can offer him a piece of the pay-per-view buys, a percentage of the buys, and they probably don't have the money to compete with UFC right now. Brock is what, 38 years old. You know, he's getting towards the end of, I don't see, you know, Brock wrestling into his 40s. So Brock's at a very pivotal stage, and it's great to be Brock Lesnar right now. You're a free agent. You've got UFC interested in you. You've got WWE interested in you. You may have Bellator throw some money at you. So this is a great time to be Brock Lesnar. I really think after WrestleMania, Frank, he probably loses the title at WrestleMania, and then Brock Lesnar's probably done with WWE because I think he'll probably go to UFC. Have a couple title shots, title matches, a couple of big marquee fights in UFC, and then he's probably done. He's going to probably get a couple more big paychecks, percentage of the UFC gates, and then I think that's going to be it for Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, it's basically at this point, it's about making how much money you can for your brand, and I don't think Brock is going to make that. I mean, the rumor has it that, you know, he's going to pay right now $5 million by WWE. I don't know if that's true or not. But he can make a whole lot more money at UFC than he can at WWE right now. And I think that Brock Lesnar is going to, you know, listen to, you know, his wife, and they're going to make a decision about what's best for their family, what's best for his brand. And I think that if he does go back to UFC, I think we might be seeing the last of Paul Heyman in WWE as well.
And I think potentially in the MMA world, you could possibly see Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley, which I think what may have an appeal to the wrestling crowd as well.
I think you could see that, yeah. I think definitely. And at some point in time, I got to think that WWE might want to consider maybe even bringing back a Bobby Lashley into the fold if they're able to get him.
Which they may be with the situation with TNA now. I mean, we touched on the end of the last podcast. They signed with Destination America. They're not going to have the money to compete. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, if TNA was strong, if the Carters wanted to make a splash, throw some money up at Brock Lesnar. I don't see that happening. So, you know, Brock probably ends his career in mixed martial arts, makes as much money as he can. He'll be about 40 years old in a couple of years, a couple more big prize fights, and he's done. The question is, with WWE then, is where do you go with your world championship now? Certainly Brock is likely going to defend the championship at WrestleMania. Who's it going to be against? You know, we've talked about it before. Is it going to be Brock versus The Rock? Or does Brock get another competitor? You said, maybe Brock versus Randy Orton is a possibility. But at some point, I think WrestleMania is probably his curtain call, and he'll probably drop the title there, and then you'll have to figure out a new strategy for your WWE Championship.
Well, I would hope that, I mean, the rumor has it that they're going to eventually put that belt on Roman Reigns. Why? I don't understand why they would do that. I don't see anything in Reigns. I mean, if anybody around there should be the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, obviously anybody from the Shield, it's going to be Seth Rollins or Dean Ambrose. And if I had to put one, I'm going to put it on Seth Rollins. He's the number one heel in the company. Why wouldn't you pull the trigger on him and make him a world champion? So I don't know what they're going to do as far as the belt goes. I mean, we'll know that when they start, you know, going for the Royal Rumble, whoever wins the Royal Rumble next year, which is rumored to be a 40-man Royal Rumble. We'll see what happens with that. But as far as the WWE Championship, we'll know after WrestleMania the direction they're going to go in with that.
And, of course, last night was Survivor Series was free on the WWE Network, and during the show they were advertising that Vince McMahon would make his first comments on the results of the Survivor Series after the Survivor Series show on the network, and for some reason that didn't happen. I'm not sure what happened there. Supposedly he had pre-recorded comments for the show, and they scrapped it. I don't know if they totally rewrote the Sting situation, because Sting was supposedly going to debut after or before the Divas match, which I think would have been a thud. I think the way they did it was much more memorable to end the show with Sting coming out and costing Team Authority their match and their power. But one thing they also mentioned, Frank, is going back to the WWE Network, is starting next week they're going to have the Steve Austin podcast on the WWE Network. And, of course, the first guest is Vince McMahon. It just happens to work out that it's actually next Monday, and next Monday, December 1st, so that 30-day trial period will end on November 30th, and then if you continue on with your free service, it'll, of course, roll over into December, and you'll start paying your $9.99. But I guess the mentality here is, Frank, is we gave you Survivor Series for free, we've given you the Monday Night War Series for free, we gave you Sting's debut in a WWE ring for free, so starting next week, we want you to start paying for the Steve Austin podcast on the WWE Network.
Yeah, and that's a good strategy. I mean, I have to give it to WWE. They did something last night. I mean, we knew about it before it happened. We broke, you know, we were, you know, listening to the stories, you know, and they came from Meltzer, and it's just spread like wildfire after that. But we already knew this thing was coming in, but it doesn't matter because it was still a big deal when it happened. And WWE has to continue to listen to us on the surveys to create these surprises. That's exactly what they did last night. They created a big surprise. Originally, I think the original plan was for Cena to come out after the Divas match or something and promote the video game. And I think that's what they originally were going to have him out there for. But they put him in a much more meaningful role. He came out and cost the Authority the match. And I think that was great. I think that was the best way to do it. I mean, have him come out there and show us and shill some merchandise like Hulk Hogan, I think that would have been a total waste of Sting. So I think the way they did it last night was great. You brought a bunch of people who didn't know Sting before, a lot of the newer fans. They're saying, oh, that guy's cool. I'm going to start painting my face like him. I want to know everything I can about Sting. Okay, well, how do you do that? You go get the WWE Network. And that's how you learn about Sting.
Boy, I think you just nailed it right there, Frank. What was the last we talked about this so many times on this podcast. What was the last major surprise you saw on a pay-per-view? And this just blows everything out of the water in recent years. I can't think of anything in recent years, say the last decade, that could top Sting debuting in a WWE ring. Because we, you know, like you said, you get those surveys, and was anything surprising about the pay-per-view? No. I mean, show after show after show. And finally, you got something that was a surprise. Although, you know, some people knew about it, it still was a surprise to see Sting show up in WWE and enter a WWE ring. That was something special. And hopefully, you know, in the future, they can come up with some more surprises, Frank, because that's what will get people talking. That will get people interested in some of your shows is, oh, did you see that water cooler talk? Did you see Sting debuted last night in WWE? He finally made his debut in a WWE ring, and that was the last major surprise I can remember, Frank. That just, and I'm sure it blows everything out of the water. That was one of the most memorable moments in wrestling we're going to see probably in the next decade or so.
I totally agree. And to me, it kind of tops
The Rock's return this year on Raw at Barclays Center with Rusev. Because I've seen The Rock. You know, I've seen The Rock come back and do stuff recently with WWE, so that wasn't really a surprise to me. Same thing last night out there, a guy who's never been in the company, a guy who has never stepped foot in the WWE ring before. And that was a big deal. And that will go down, like you said, probably the biggest story in the next decade, like you just said. Next 2 years, we're still going to be talking about that last night of Survivor Series. And the fact that, like I said before, it could be a telling sign. Sting debuted at Survivor Series. Undertaker debuted at 1990 Survivor Series. So, something to think about.
And I haven't seen a lot of speculation on this, but I would expect the speculation to start now. Sting for the Hall of Fame for next year.
Sting for the Hall of Fame for next year, absolutely. And also, people are already talking, Macho Man Randy Savage. Supposedly will be a headliner next year in the Hall of Fame. And if it happens, it would not surprise me. And that's going to happen, and it's going to happen either with or without Randy Popple having anything to do with it. I think WWE is going to do what they want.
And I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because anybody heard my last podcast? We're talking about the WWE Hall of Fame. I think I get my two cents on the WWE Hall of Fame right now.
Yep.
But you know that speculation is going to start. Oh, Sting showed up. Now maybe they'll finally put him in the Hall of Fame. Randy Savage. Yeah, don't get me started on Randy Savage.
It was never. but you know the thing with Sting though, Steve, it was never in question whether Sting was going to go in. The question has always
true.
Been.
Yeah.
There was never any doubt about that. I should say. The question has always been when. Was Sting going to come over? You know, it's been years and years and years where Sting has said, okay, I've been talking to WWE, but, you know, TNA would come in at the last minute and we would come to a decision with that. Well, I thought when Sting left, you know, we had that they did that Impact show where it was supposedly Sting's last night with the company, and I'm thinking, okay, he's going to resign. Well, when he didn't, and then he, you know, he started doing something in the video game, okay, maybe this is happening for real. Well, last night was... You know, even us here on the podcast, we were so angry at one point at Sting for not signing a contract or doing anything when we started calling him Sting. So,
well, I will say, Frank, I mean, we're very positive on Sting's debut, and it was very memorable, and it's
right. One
of the over-top angles I've ever seen in wrestling. I mean, the fans went nuts. It was special, but you know, to criticize Sting is, where was this about 7 years ago?
Yeah.
What took you so freaking long? Why would you stay loyal to TNA when that's been a sinking ship for so long? I know the Jarretts, and the Jarretts helped you get your start in the business, etc. But, brother, the TNA has never meant anything, and you had a chance years ago to be part of the WWE. In fact, he said, you know, they were very close talking to Vince. What was it? We were talking 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. You know, why didn't it happen then? Look how much it could have meant more that many years ago. And you could have been a part of the WWE family. And not people say, hey, Sting, you know, where you been the last decade? You know, what's going on the last 5 years? I mean, you don't wrestle no more when you're supposedly wrestling for the dead brand all these years. But why did it take so long? I guess it's only something Sting's going to be able to answer. But, man, it's just like so many years have passed now, and we could have seen Sting play prominent roles in WWE. And it just feels like he's missed the boat on all that.
Yeah, I you know. Yeah, you just know it right there. Sting, you know, 100% love Sting's debut, but I have to think about, you know, 7 years ago, this guy could have been a bigger deal in the company. He could have worked with a lot more guys. He was a lot younger, you know, and all the time that he wasted in TNA doing all those matches that didn't really mean a damn thing. I mean, going out there wrestling Abyss and doing those wacky matches he was doing there, he could have been working with some of the best talent in WWE.
To wrestle Jeff Hardy, where he could barely wrestle in the ring.
Yeah.
In no condition to wrestle. When you could have wrestled on a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam.
Right.
Would have meant something, and people would have actually paid to see it.
Right.
Not for 15,000 pay-per-view buys or whatever that show got.
Yep.
I mean, I understand loyalty, and loyalty's great, Frank, but...
Well, it's not even loyalty, though.
That's the thing that's never... I mean, that is the one thing that's never happened before with Sting in a WWE ring, and... It just should have happened so many years ago, and I don't know why it did.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I'm glad he's here now, and we can go back and question for years and years ago why he didn't sign or why he didn't come over. Yeah, loyalty is one thing, loyalty to the Jarretts, but, you know, honestly, Steve, the last 8 years of TNA or whatever, it hasn't really had anything to do with the Jarretts. It's all been about, you know, the Carter
thing. True. And you notice after Jeff was officially gone, that's when he jumped.
Right. I think he jumped a little bit before that.
Right. But I mean, but he, as long as Jeff Jarrett was affiliated with the company, he still stayed for the most part.
Right.
But he, and now that Jeff was gone, then he left.
Yeah.
And he didn't resign.
Yeah. And AJ Styles and all the rest of his ass as well.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago, I mean, every year it's what? January would come up, is up for renewal. What's he going to do? He resigns. He resigns. And it's like so many matches you could have, you probably passed up now. And again, you don't know. Even years ago, if Steam comes back 5 years ago, say, how many matches will he have at 46 years old in a WWE ring? Maybe not many, but at least your how many matches he worked with in TNA. If you could have as many matches he had in TNA in WWE, I mean, just think of all the high-profile matches you missed out on, all the great opponents you could have had. I'm not knocking the TNA talent, but, you know, certainly when you wrestle for TNA versus WWE, it's like night and day. I mean, how many times do you hear stories of Christian being in an airplane and some people saying, you know, why don't you wrestle anymore? RVD said the same thing on the last podcast, or one of the previous podcasts we did with Rob is, yeah, you know, I go on an airplane, nobody knows I'm in TNA. I show up in WWE, certainly the lights go on and people, hey, there's RVD. You know, he's like instant credibility. Just think of all the missed opportunities that Sting, I mean, he could have wrestled John Cena, Randy Orton, you know, years ago. I don't know, who Big Show. I mean, he could have had a big match with the Big Show years ago. Maybe Mark Henry. I don't know. I mean, years ago when they had a little more momentum under him. I mean, now I don't see it. But, I mean, if he's only going to have one or two matches, Frank, it's probably going to be with Undertaker and Triple H. And that means no John Cena, no Randy Orton, et cetera. No Brock Lesnar, no Rock. So you just think of all the matches that – the dream matches that we're never going to get to see. But I guess we – you know, now this is Thanksgiving week, Frank. I guess at least we should be thankful that he finally showed up in the whip and that we're going to maybe get one or two matches out of the Stinger.
Well, you know, and who's to say that we're only going to get one or two matches? I mean, they can make a deal where – We could get a handful of matches with Sting, spread out over time, and we could make these some of these other pay per views that mean nothing a bigger deal. Like we could probably see, you know, in a year Sting on the next Survivor Series. Who knows?
And that'd be a way to get another match out of him. Is he works a 5-on-5 match?
Right.
Where he just does one big spot in the ring, and that's all he needs to wrestle for that match.
Yeah.
Or is what Roddy Piper wants to do a tag match with him.
Right, and it's like Roddy Piper wants to do a tag match with him and Sting versus Hogan or somebody. I'm like, stop piggybacking off of Sting. You know?
Let me say this. I don't want to see Sting in a tag match. I want to see him Sting versus somebody. I don't want to see Roddy Piper and Sting versus Hulk Hogan and somebody else. I mean, if there was a dream opponent, he'd put him in the equation, but who are you going to put in the ring with Hulk Hogan? Right. John Cena?
Hogan can't work.
I don't want to see that. That's not going to work.
Hogan can't work.
Hogan can't work anyway. He probably can't pass a physical.
No. See, that's the thing about Sting. He go out there last night. I mean, you know Sting had to have went out there and pass a physical to do anything in the ring. You know,
physical.
Yeah. So he had to go out there and pass. So Sting obviously can pass a physical. Sting is obviously in shape to wrestle. Hogan cannot do shit. that's the bottom line. He can't do nothing.
Except talk and say, buy this for $9.99, brother.
Yeah, buy this for $9.99, brother. Or we got these people in the front row, dude. Or can't do nothing.
I go to Rent-A-Center, brother.
Speaking of renting things, right quick, I want to jump off topic because I want to ask you, Steve. Do you ever use Redbox?
No, I haven't.
Okay, because I got an email out there. I know a lot of our listeners out there probably use Redbox. You know, see, Redbox said they're going to be increasing their prices a little bit. So it says here that starting December 2nd, that the price for renting DVDs at a Redbox will increase to $1.50 a day. The price for renting Blu-rays will increase to $2 a day. And the price of renting video games, so like Call of Duty that just came out, or Grand Theft Auto 5 for the PS4, Xbox One, or the game that's getting blasted right now, WWE 2K15. You can rent all those for $3 a day right now at the Redbox starting next week, December 2nd. Everybody's got to make money somehow, I guess.
Well, you said Redbox. I thought you meant Red Fox. And
oh,
of Red
Fox.
Yeah. One of my all-time favorite TV shows is Sanford and Son.
Yeah, Redbox. For people out there, I mean, $3 for a video game is just ridiculous. $3 a damn day for a game, you might as well just go spend the $60 and just go out there and buy it outright.
Everybody's got to make their money. You know, Hulu was going to go up in price, I think. Netflix already announced they were going to go up in price.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of people are waiting for the WWE to increase the price as well.
Right.
At some point.
At some point. But it's like, you know something, honestly, WWE, they need to keep their prices where they are. Or if they want to go up to $10 a month, or, you know, not $10 a month, but, you know, go up, you know, maybe $11, $12, whatever, I understand why they would do it, because they're actually giving you pay-per-views. I mean, we can ride here on the network a lot and whatever we do, but at the end of the day, I mean, they don't mean much, but they're still giving you pay-per-views on the network.
But they don't seem anything special. That's the problem. I mean, last night you had the Raw set at Survivor Series.
It's no different than when WCW would, you know, when they were going out. They would have the same set every month for the pay-per-views. So
yeah, I don't think WWE is going out of business anytime soon, so why not get a new set for Survivor Series?
Yeah.
You're on the network. You're showing it for free. You want everybody to watch it, and it's the Raw set. It feels like Raw again.
True.
I mean, you were getting this. You were talking this with, what, Fred Ricciani on one of the previous podcasts we did. It's the same set. It feels like the same show. I mean, I only watched a little bit of Survivor Series, but it felt like I'm watching Raw. I don't want to feel like I'm watching Raw when I'm supposed to be plunking down money to watch a pay-per-view. And I know, you know, you're getting it for $9.99 now. You're not paying the $50 or $60. But even then, when I'm turning on the pay-per-views I've seen on the network, they seem like I'm watching Raw without commercials. And that's nothing special to me. Raw is so boring and generic now, I don't care about Raw.
True. And don't get me started. I'm the last one, you know, that's going to disagree with you about the sets.
Why can't they just invest a little bit of money? You were saying it reminds you of the dying days of WCW. Well, I don't think Vince is going to go out of business anytime soon. So,
no, but what I meant by that was that WCW, it was way before WCW was rumored to be going, you know, being sold. They started using the same sets around 2000, 2001. You know, they were using the same set because their budget had completely got, you know, cut in half. And they cut back on everything. They cut back on the stages. They cut back on pyrotechnics. If you look at the WWE product today, if you look at WWE's product in 2001, late 2000, it's the same thing. Just, you know, it was, we had sporadic veterans on the roster, but we had all these new guys. And then it was, we cut back on pyrotechnics, and we cut back on the stages. And we started using the same stage for every pay-per-view. So, say, Halloween Havoc, you know, they used to have the cemetery graveyard set up, or they would have the big pumpkin or something like that. Well, that got replaced with a big screen, kind of like what Raw has right now, and some curtains around and all that. That's what you have right now. Same thing.
You know, that might be the perfect segue into the discussion group, because you put a thread out there asking, you know, who was responsible for the death of WCW, and we got quite a response for that thread.
Yeah, and we can go into some of those responses right now, what a lot of people were saying. A guy named Josh Diagno wrote in on our discussion page here on this thread, and this is back during November 16th. He put in that he believes the ones responsible for killing WCW was AOL Time Warner, the merger. I, myself, wrote, I think that played a role, but I also wrote that the company was doomed the moment Ted Turner bought it from the Crockett's due to the Crockett's mismanagement of the promotion. Somebody else also wrote in. Nick Butterfield wrote in. He says that Jamie Kellner was responsible for the death of WCW due to the fact that he made the decision to remove all wrestling programming from TBS and TNT.
He made the final call, but I don't think you can say he killed WCW.
Well, he put the final nail
in
the head.
He did. And probably doing so killed the value of his library. I mean, that should have been worth millions and millions of dollars, and Vince got it for a bargain sale.
Right.
He got a Walmart price on it.
Exactly. And that's just – I mean, you got a point there. I mean, that library, because, you know, Ted Turner – made a valiant effort to buy a lot of libraries from, you know, defunct situations. And, I mean, he bought, you know, what did he buy? He bought the Hanna-Barbera library with cartoons and all that, the Flintstones and Jetsons and all that, which I thought was great. And formed Cartoon Network with that, Turner Classic Movies. So they could a lot. I mean, they could be still making money today on the WCW library, but, you know, they were stupid to do that.
What if the visionary Ted would have launched a wrestling network back in the day? You know, he's got the Cartoon Network, and he end up with all that footage from the Crockett days, which I'm assuming he got the Crockett footage, and all the WCW footage, the WCW Saturday Nights, the main event, Power Hour.
Yeah.
Was one of the shows. I mean, all those shows he had at that disposal at that time. What if he would have launched a WCW network at that time, or a wrestling network channel, which, you know, the media mogul, they always say he is on the Monday Night Wars series. What if he would have started a wrestling channel way back then? Would that have changed anything? Would that have built up the popularity of wrestling at that time when they were certainly losing their popularity in the late 90s, early 2000s? That would have been real interesting. Of course, you know, Ted was pretty much out of power then, but as you were saying, you know, he bought all these cartoon franchises, the footage to make Cartoon Network. Well, he probably could have made the wrestling channel, you know, back at that time as well. Would have been interesting.
Right. Who's they would have worked? It wouldn't have worked without WWF programming.
No, probably
not. But he could have easily swallowed up the AWA and all these other promotions before Vince got a chance to get it.
Yeah, Mid-South was still out there at that time.
Yeah.
The NWA Florida.
Yeah.
Some great tapes were still out there at that time, so
yeah. It
would have been interesting.
Continuing on here with some of the comments here, Wayne May wrote in, who really killed WCW? Well, after everything that took place prior to his death, notable people who played key roles in his demise, at the end of the day, it was Jamie Kellner who pulled the plug. So another guy saying Jamie Kellner. Oliver John Gardner wrote in, the money handling killed WCW. If they were more careful with how they spent it, then they would have been able to go a lot longer than what they did. I think WCW was, $60-something million in red before they shut down?
I think they lost, $60 million in a year, didn't they?
Right.
Something like that. So, yeah. They were bleeding money fast.
Yeah, they were bleeding money a lot. Yeah. Darren Humberg wrote in, what really killed the WCW was guaranteed contracts and ability to turn down a storyline or turn down an angle. He says contracts killed them because the workers would show up and just call it in and say no if they didn't like the way the writers were going with them. He says the old NWA days, the top guys got money, but they actually worked for it.
Who said that?
It was our friend here, Darren Humberg, from the discussion group.
Yeah, I think Darren just nailed it.
Yeah.
That had a big factor in them going down.
Yeah.
Guaranteed contracts, guys running the show behind the scenes saying, I don't want to work with this guy. I don't want to lay down for this guy. I don't want this guy in my group. And, you know, it goes back to Eric Bischoff. He signed those contracts. So
right.
It played a huge factor in their demise.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what a lot of the comments here from that thread read is like, I think we're all in agreement here. That it was a lot of things that killed World Championship Wrestling, but the majority of them was those guaranteed contracts. A lot of it also was giving wrestlers creative control to do whatever they want to. And it was also mismanagement from Eric Bischoff, you know, Harvey Schiller, Brad Siegel, Jamie, Kellner coming in, canceling all the product on TNT and TBS. That's what, you know, killed the company.
And I have to agree.
And that's what did it. Bottom line is that WCW, in my opinion, they were going to go out of business anyways. They were going to go out of business due to the fact that they were losing so much damn money.
In that thread, nobody mentioned Vince Russo?
Nobody mentioned Vince Russo, no.
Really? Isn't that amazing? Because one of the names you always think of when you think death of WCW is Vince Russo. Maybe people are finally realizing that really it wasn't Vince Russo that caused that ship to sink.
No, I don't think so. I don't think either.
I don't think
that whatever Russo was writing there for the couple months that he wrote it is gonna really make a difference about what was going on back in 89 when or 88 when Turner bought the company. The company was always mismanaged from day one. So it doesn't matter what this guy does for 3 months or whatever at WCW, it doesn't matter. Some of the stuff that Russo and Ferrara came up with was god awful television. But that's not gonna change the fact that the company was already $60 million in the red during the height of the company. I mean, here's a company, Steve, that paid, I believe, I'm just going strictly here by rumor, they paid $3 to $6 million to use Voodoo Child.
Wow.
For Hogan. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but if that is the case, that is asinine to pay that much for a song.
For like 6 months of use.
Right.
They didn't buy the song, they just like leased it.
They leased it for Hogan's entrance there in the WCW, and I thought it was ridiculous that they paid that amount of money for the song. So it was a lot of WCW's mismanagement came for the as far as financial go, it's a lot of these deals that Eric Bischoff signed when WCW was at their height. So they signed a lot of crappy stuff for merchandising and all this other stuff that they had to devote television time to. It was just a bad thing. I mean, they had Vince McMahon by the throat, and they should have taken him out. But it always comes back to somebody messed that up. And at the end of the day, Bischoff was the guy running the company, so I guess Bischoff was
right.
The one.
Yeah. You know, when you hear the stories that, you know, Monday comes and you have 135 guys in your building because they didn't know who was going to be on the show yet.
Yeah.
So they have to fly all these guys in at the building, and you're only going to use maybe half of the guys.
Right.
So you're flying all these guys in week to week, and Monday comes, and you don't even know who's on the show yet. You get to the show, and they have a board written down, and then everybody changes the board. So look how much money they lose on a weekly basis from just flying in the talent every week.
Right.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, they were just bleeding money. I mean, signed Lanny Poffo, never put him on TV. There was a doc, the Monday Night Wars they talked about. They signed Mikey Whipwreck from ECW. They barely used the guy. Didn't get any bang for that investment. So, yeah, just a lot of poor decisions on the management side that escalated their demise, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it was gonna go out anyways, in my opinion. But this just sped up the process.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
And then another thread that you introduced and that got a lot of comments was the worst storylines in wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that I added to the discussion was the Black Scorpion. Because I just thought that was that angle had so much potential. And if it would have turned out to be the Ultimate Warrior or somebody of that ilk, I mean, there was a lot of guys they could have turned out to be. I guess the higher power one could have been something different as well. But the Black Scorpion, they built up for weeks. They had the shadow and the mangled voice. And in the end, it was Ric Flair. Like, who cares?
Yeah, but, right? I mean, going back to that angle there, the Black Scorpion, they were at the time, weren't they trying to get Warrior? I mean, that's what I've always heard.
I thought he was the original idea, right?
Yeah, I believe he was.
Because he was saying that his voice had changed, you wouldn't recognize him anymore, and then it was Ric Flair.
Yeah.
You see every week. Who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that was the worst storyline, but it was one that had so much potential of really meaning something, and they just totally dropped the ball on that one.
Right. When we talk about the worst storylines in the wrestling business, a lot of people commented here on the thread, and a lot of this stuff I forgot about.
Yeah, me
so
too.
we're gonna read a couple of responses here from the discussion group. And out there listening right now, you know, whenever we put a thread on the discussion group, go ahead and comment on it, because you never know when we're gonna use your responses here on the GRP.
Get your name mentioned here.
Exactly. Put you over like Rovers. Roy Brucier wrote in. He says, when Ric Flair was in a mental hospital, was one of the worst angles in WCW. Do you remember that?
I really, you know, honestly, I can't say I remember that.
Well, I remember it vaguely. I remember it happening when Ric Flair was the president of WCW. And
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, now that you said that, yeah, that does ring a bell.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you remember, yeah. If you remember in one of those segments, Scott Hall was in the same institution.
Okay, yeah, now that does ring a bell. Yeah, okay.
Our boy here, Ephraim, wrote in, Papa Shango, with the power of the Dreaded Voodoo in the famous Gorilla Monsoon words, is a warrior spellbound. I remember that. That was some of the most corniest, cheesiest stuff I ever saw.
That might work today. They're basically a cartoon today. Maybe that would work in 2014.
Could be. Josh DeAnio, sorry if I butchered that, he rolled in the higher power just due to the fact that the payoff sucked, and he also rolled in the invasion storyline.
Yeah, I wouldn't say either one sucked, but, I mean, the payoff, neither one had the big payoff.
You know, the thing with the higher power, was cool because I just wish they would have did I wish they would have done the reveal at a pay-per-view and not have been on Raw.
Right.
I mean, but when Vince took it off, he said, "It's me, Austin." And Jim Ross hit that line, "Oh, son of a bitch." That was classic. That was classic.
I mean, there was all kinds of, like, Jake the Snake could have been the higher power,
right.
You know, have a mind control. I just thought it was like the Black Scorpion, the payoff, the reveal was so disappointing. It should have been somebody else that we're not – think outside the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Darren Humber wrote in. He says one of the worst storylines or angles he saw was the Team Challenge series in the AWA.
I think that was before my time. I don't really remember that, to be honest with you.
Ryan Heimingle wrote in that he thought the Bam Bam Bigelow Lawrence Taylor cause of the match in the lead into WrestleMania, he thought that sucked. He also thought the Luger into Tatanka angle from 1994 sucked.
That's good with that one.
Robert Abdul-Jabbar Jackson.
Wow.
That's a hell of a name.
It is.
He wrote in, these are the ones he thought sucked.
Okay.
Thought was some of the worst. He wrote Katie Vick, The Higher Power, Sarah's Stalker. You remember that? AKA
TNA. Yep.
The New Blood versus Millionaires Club. And then he also wrote in Hogan versus the Horseman in the Dungeon of Doom.
I'll give him some credit on the New Blood because that's what they needed to do. I mean, remember years ago when Dixie was talking about bringing in Paul Heyman?
Right.
And what was Paul Heyman's strategy? You got to forget about the ratings, get rid of all these high-priced talent. Let me build new stars. You have to focus on the younger talent. As much as you want to criticize Vince Russo, he did try to inject some fresh, young faces into the storyline. The problem is, with the Millionaires Club, is who's going to put any of these guys over?
Well, the thing was that the New Blood should have been formed right after NWO. That's how it should have been.
Yes.
Or they should have formed. Or they should have formed the New Blood while the NWO angle was still going on.
True.
That's what you should have done. Like, Raven's Flock should have been the ones fighting the NWO. But that's something that we can debate about on another podcast.
I think Katie Vick takes the cake. I can't think of anything worse. I was embarrassed to be a wrestling fan when they did that.
Oh, I got one more that might go there, and I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay.
We're going to continue here with Ryan. Ryan Heimingle wrote in again. He said that they dropped the ball with CM Punk in the infamous pipe bomb. And I touched on that a little bit earlier when we were talking. An angle that was just as disgusting as Katie Vick was, in my opinion, and he wrote it here, Ryan Heimingle once again, Al Snow and the Big Boss Man with the dogs.
Yeah, I didn't like that, but I don't think it's worse than Katie Vick.
Yeah, Katie Vick was bad.
That I don't know how you can get much worse than insinuating you're having relationship with a corpse.
Yeah.
That's about as bottom as it gets, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You had the transvestite with Mark Henry. You had a lot of real cheesy stuff with the Attitude Era, but having intercourse with a corpse,
that's
about as bad as it gets, I think.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that won't be making it anytime soon. Wayne May wrote in, Katie Vick, we just talked about that one.
Yep.
And he said that Shawn Michaels and the whole Shawn Michaels and God versus the McMahons.
That was bad, I will say.
Yeah.
As someone that believes in God, I'm not even going to say I'm offended because, I mean, you watch wrestling. You can't really be offended with wrestling. Although, as I said, I was offended with the Katie Vick stuff.
Right.
But the God thing was pretty bad. It was pretty stupid.
He also wrote in Undertaker versus Undertaker from 1994.
Yeah, I didn't care for that much either.
And he also wrote in Hogan versus the Warrior from 1998.
That wasn't much of a return, was it?
No.
We were talking about the Sting returning to the wrestling scene, but that Ultimate Warrior return to WCW wasn't the best, that's for sure.
Yeah, love Ultimate Warrior. So sad that he's not with us, but I'm gonna shoot it like it is. I thought Warrior's entire run in WCW sucked.
It was bad.
I mean, he worked with Hogan. Hogan just was terrible at 98 there at WCW.
Hogan wanted his win back.
Yeah, that's all it was.
That's all it was.
And Warrior acknowledged that.
Yeah, so he's okay, pay me and beat me then, and I'll go home.
Yeah, well, I mean, he said had he had known that that's what it was, he wouldn't have done it. But not because it's not. He said because basically what Warrior said was it's not like I was hurting for money.
Well, there you go. I mean that all that was Hogan getting the Warrior back so he can pin him.
Exactly.
That was it.
Yeah.
I put you over at WrestleMania. Now you put me over.
Right.
Well, what a jackass.
Wayne May also wrote in that he hated the Vince versus Stephanie match in the storyline that led up to their I Quit match at No Mercy 2003.
Yeah, that was pretty corny.
I wrote in myself, I did not like the angle with Hogan versus Undertaker from 2002. If you remember at that segment they did on Raw where Hogan had the bike stall out.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah.
Wayne May also wrote in the entire Scott Steiner test Stacy Keebler storyline from 2003. And this one tops it off. He says he thought this angle was horrible, and I have to agree with him. Remember when Vince McMahon faked his death when the Olympic thing exploded?
Yep. And they killed it. No pun intended. They killed it when the Chris Benoit story broke.
Exactly. And he also wrote in here The Undertaker versus the Million Dollar Corporation from 1995.
And I got to mention a couple that you mentioned because I was just kind of thinking aloud in my brain here, but the Legion of Doom drunk angle.
Yeah, I put that on here. Yeah. I mentioned that.
Yeah, as comments you made as well, and the finger poke of Doom.
Oh yeah, I'm getting to that. And I also wrote in here. I also wrote in the alliance to end Hulkamania in WCW with with Zeus returning as the Gangster. And the horrible ending with the Yeti at Halloween Havoc when him and the Big Show are dry humping Hogan.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And somebody actually one of our Facebook group members actually posted a video of that from YouTube. And I also put in the Miss Elizabeth Goldberg angle from Nitro from the January 4th, 1999 show, the Finger Poke of Doom episode.
Yep.
And once again, you know, Scotty Wilkerson, another discussion group member, he put the God storyline as one. He put it on here as well. He thought that the Vince McMahon Shawn Michaels program lasted too long, and it wasn't really a good payoff to it. Couldn't agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Ryan Heimigo wrote in again. He says that the monster truck match with Hogan versus the Giant from Halloween Havoc. Totally agree. That sucks.
Anything with a Giant, Big Show sucks.
I totally agree with you.
He was okay in 96 when he was a Giant. He burst on the scene, but he got fat, he got lazy, and just not a very engaging character.
No, he still isn't there. And like I said, outside Survivor Series, he returns for the millionth time.
Yeah.
Wayne May wrote in, he said, Kane versus Fake Kane from 2006.
Who was the Fake Kane? I can't remember.
The Fake Kane was Luke Gallows.
Luke Gallows, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Good guy.
Yeah, good guy. I liked him. I liked him when he was an Aces and Eights. He was cool. Richard Saint H. wrote in, the current Bella Twins storyline sucks. Mark Hornet Masselia wrote in, RoboCop rescuing Sting from the Four Horsemen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Chris Lappin wrote in, Mae Young giving birth to the Hand.
That's a classic.
Yep. Darren Humberg wrote in the segment where they performed surgery on Jim Ross.
The surgery they performed on Jim Ross.
Yeah, remember when Vince did that angle with JR after JR had surgery? Surgery.
That's right. Yeah, you remember that. Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the one they did. And Vince says, oh, always do you had your head up your ass.
Yeah, they've done a lot of lame JR stuff.
Yep, and
very disrespectful.
And I tell you, lately, you know, listening to another podcast, I heard that the reason why a lot of that stuff was done to JR was due to Kevin Dunn. You know,
He's a fan of Kevin Dunn.
Right.
That's about it.
And his buck teeth.
There you go.
And we also have one more thread here, real fast, I put up here. It was worst member of the NWO.
I saw that thread, and the first thing that I came up with, somebody had already written it down. I thought Horace Hogan was pretty bad.
Oh, we got some here. Let me run through my list. Rob Bissell started off, and he wrote Virgil.
Yeah, Vincent.
Yep. Joseph J. Alexander wrote Horace Hogan. My man Ephraim wrote NWO Sting. Joseph Finney III wrote Stevie Ray. Owen Kalicki wrote Horace Hogan.
Yep.
We got another one for Virgil. Mark A. Morrell wrote Beefcake. Joe Paz wrote Horace Hogan in the Disco Inferno. Rick Rohde wrote Michael Wall Street. Anthony T. DiAlfonso wrote Conan. Joe Pass wanted to know, because this is I had to re-edit the thread. He wanted to know, was this NWO or was it every NWO? Like, you know, because there were so many, right? We have the Wolfpack, we have the Silver and Black. I said every NWO that you could think of. After doing that, it got a little bit wider. Kevin Perilous wrote Dusty Rhodes.
I still don't know to this day how they got a shirt to fit that guy.
Yeah. Roy Lucier wrote this one, and I don't agree with this at all. He wrote Kevin Nash.
How can you criticize the first three? I mean, that's what made the angle.
That's right. I don't understand. I don't agree with that one.
You may not personally like the guy, but
right.
I mean, you got to give him credit for what they pulled off.
Yeah.
One of us is a big Hulk Hogan fan, but you got to give the guy credit for turning heel and joining that group at that time.
Exactly. If he hadn't done it, it wouldn't have happened.
That's right. True.
Wayne May wrote in, he'll go with Dusty Rhodes. Such a pointless addition to the group.
It was a very weak turn, I will say that.
Yeah. Nick Crisp wrote Kyle Petty. Remember the
guy? Kyle Petty.
NASCAR driver Kyle Petty.
The
NWO car.
Okay.
Nick Butterfield wrote in Louis Spicoli.
The late Louis Spicoli.
Late Louis Spicoli, yeah. You remember he was Scott Hall's lackey for a while there?
Yep.
He was actually a part of that angle with Dusty Rhodes that sold out 98 when Rhodes turned NWO. Remember he was out there. He took a couple of elbow drops from Dusty Rhodes. They always call that angle, we call it the American Nightmare is what we call it.
I never really thought of him as an NWO member, but I know he was there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Chris Shiplett wrote in Stevie Ray or Brian Adams, but he was a tough call between both of them.
What was the group? It was Adams, Horace, Vincent, and one other guy. Wasn't it like the job NWO squad?
Yeah, B team. It was Stevie Ray, Vincent, Brian Adams, and Horace.
Yeah, that group was definitely the worst group they had. Yeah.
Craig Lawrence wrote Scott Norton. I don't think they got their money's worth out of Norton like they could have, personally.
Yeah, that was he was a big star in Japan at that time.
Yeah, he was, NWO Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
Oliver John Gardner wrote in, and this sums it up for him. He says, everyone apart from Hogan, Hall, Nash, Six, Giant, and Eric Bischoff.
Well, if you're protecting the group as just the elite members, you think a lot of these guys suck.
Right. Nick Butterfield wrote in, he liked Ted DiBiase as part of the group. I thought DiBiase was great in the NWO.
Yeah, I agree. Because everybody thought he was the million-dollar man, he had a lot of money, it made sense to put him in the group.
That's right.
And he was a former WWF guy.
Right. Daniel Sanders wrote in and responded with Rick Rude.
I liked Rick Rude.
I thought Rick Rude was good, but I don't think Rick Rude belonged in the NWO.
Probably not.
Yeah.
RDX.
Mike Demeter wrote in Booker T. and Goldust from the WWE's version of the NWO, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't really consider Goldust a member. Booker T was the one who was a member. Booker T was the one who was wearing the colors. He was the one coming out to with the NWO video, but Booker T never came out to the music.
Interesting.
Yeah, he never came out to it. That's one thing I thought kind of sucked about it. You know, when Stevie Ray was in his brother, he would come out to the music. And now I'm not talking about that beat team theme either. I'm talking about the porno music.
The porno music, yep.
Right. And that was pretty much it from the NWO thread there of our discussion group. You know, we get a lot of people that comes in, you know, and they say a lot of good things, but we all can agree that NWO had way too many people.
And we got our usual question from Ravon here, and of course this first question was about the direction of Sting, and I think we've really covered the Sting situation today, but his second question is about Shane McMahon possibly being a candidate for the Gerwig.net Hall of Fame. And it's an interesting name. You know, Shane McMahon was not on the scene for very long, but he definitely made his mark. He definitely had an impact on the business. I don't know, Frank, what do you think of Shane McMahon for the Hall of Fame?
I think Shane McMahon is definitely a guy who could be in the Gerwig.net Hall of Fame, absolutely. I mean, Shane McMahon can go into anybody's Hall of Fame, to be honest with you. Here's a guy that, I mean, Shane was there as a referee, but Shane didn't really come on the scene until 1998 during that whole angle with Steve Austin. And then he, you know, turned heel. It really made his mark at the Survivor Series. Remember when he gave Austin the bird when he was in that match with Mick Foley? And he just went on from there. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I would agree. Can't really say him on longevity, but in the short time he was there, he definitely made an impact on the business. So it's an interesting name.
I think Shane would be entertaining there right now.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I would take him over Stephanie. You know, people like Stephanie. She looks good, but I think they really just missed the boat. I mean, how you miss the boat on your son, but like he left, but he probably knew the writing was on the wall that he was going to go with Shane, with Stephanie, and Trips was dating Stephanie at that time, and it's too bad. I thought Shane was a very entertaining character.
But come on, let's be honest here. That has to sting. No pun intended, but that has to really sting you in the ass on that one. Seriously, the fact that you are, that's my father.
Yeah.
But he's catering to Triple H and Seven, which, you know, when you have a son, you pass it down to him.
Right.
It's a fact. That's where it's supposed to go. But this
Vince McMahon Senior, Vince McMahon Junior.
Right. And then you all.
Now it was going to be Shane's. It was Shane's ball, and Vince took it away from him.
Right.
For whatever reason, I guess we'll probably that might be one of those we'll probably never find out the true answer. I mean, we've asked some guests here on the Gerwig Report podcast, the GRP. You know what happened with Shane, and nobody can really say.
Yeah,
it's too bad. It's just it's unfortunate that it happened that way.
Yeah, because I think Shane, you know, Shane would have had a great mind for the business, and I'm really surprised. I mean, Shane is very very successful what he's doing today, but I think that the business is in his blood. It's very, you know, it just sucks that he's not a part of that. And it would be very interesting, and I'm just going out on a limb here, and I don't think it will ever happen. But if Shane McMahon was ever able to want to compete against them, Shane has a lot of resources. I think he
You know, Shane might have been the ultimate guy last night to be in Sting's spot to screw the authority, right?
Yeah, but I'm talking about here on a whole wide spectrum of actually real-life competition. I think Shane McMahon would be a guy that can beat there. I think Shane McMahon could have took an organization like a TNA or Ring of Honor and done wonders with it, just simply because his last name is McMahon.
It gives you more credibility, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
In this business, certainly McMahon is the name. Is the name?
But he probably would never do that. Want to compete against him? I don't know. I just think it's kind
maybe
of
that's,
I think
maybe
it's
that's
kind
what
of
we
bizarre.
Need, Frank. It's all about. I mean, TNA is never going to compete with Vince.
Right.
And we just need something, and we were talking about with Fred Ricciani, we just need something that forces WWE to change a little bit.
Yeah, I think Shane McMahon definitely would want to do that. And I just think this whole thing right here with them is just bizarre that Vince caters to the son-in-law more than he does his son. It's just... I don't know, man. It's just the whole family is just weird.
Yeah. What was the angle where Vince was checking out his daughter?
Right.
Yeah. So definitely some weirdness in this family.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate what happened to Shane, and that's a good question. If you'd like to see Shane McMahon as a nominee for the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame, definitely let us know. Hall of Fame at Gerwick.net.
Yep.
You can suggest somebody, and we've got a lot of suggestions for the next month. Looks like Christian will get in for November. Open field for December. Who do you want to see on the ballot for December? Got a lot of interesting names, Frank, as a possibility for December. I don't think I've done the final count yet on who it's going to be, but about three or four really interesting names coming up. So something we'll definitely talk about in future episodes of the GRP. So stay tuned for that.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, we appreciate you joining us today on the GRP. This is episode 68. The previous editions of our podcast are available at Gerwick.net, as well on Stitcher, on TuneIn, Spreaker. Go back and check us out. And as Frank would definitely wants to put over, he's got a lot of great content from our show and interviews we've done at the YouTube page. And last check, Frank, we have over 100 subscribers on YouTube.
Right, 109 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you very much out there for those listening and subscribing. We've got to send a special shout-out out there to TV Tracks. The TV Tracks has brought a lot more people over to their YouTube channel and a lot more people checking out the podcast lately, too. So definitely want to give a shout-out over there to TV Tracks. And like I said, go over to the YouTube channel. We have everything up there right now. The Vince Russo interview is up. Teddy Long is up. RBD is up. Matt Hardy, Frankie Kazarian, Christopher Daniels is up. The Body Slam podcast with Ellie Green is up there. So check it out right now, youtube.com/GerwickReportPodcast. Subscribe and like the videos. And more content is going to be coming up there. And, you know, join our Facebook discussion group as well. We're about to hit 2,000 members very shortly, so that's a hell of an accomplishment in the short amount of time that we've been doing this. So want to give a special thank you to everybody out there that's, you know, come on the scene and joined our group. And we have really, really good group of people and really good discussions out there. And we have our, you know, usual people that come on, like Darren and Wayne May and Efren and Owen and all these different people out there, Andrew Davis and all these guys are out there constantly commenting on the threads. So, you know, we like to thank you guys for supporting us.
Cassidy Ash.
Yep, Cassidy
great
Ash.
Great comments as well.
I've been a fan of hers ever since she knocked CM Punk. So,
yeah, and just to be clear, our Facebook page or discussion group is closed, but you can request to join the group.
Exactly.
And then you'll be approved, and you can be in the group. And as long as you don't cause too many ruffles, you can stay in the group.
Exactly.
We definitely appreciate you coming in and partaking, and you never know. You come in and be a part of our discussion group. You might just have your name mentioned here on the GRP, as a lot of people did today.
Exactly. And I just want to let people out there know that, you know, we in the next couple of months, whatever, we're going to be doing a lot of different things here on the podcast. You know, we're talking constantly about how to improve the show. And we're going to be talking about, you know, possibility of giving away DVDs on here in the future. That's one of the things that we want to start doing here. And possibility of a Gerwick Report podcast T-shirt coming out. So we got a lot of big plans coming up in the next year. So stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. Gerwick.net, www.gerwek.net. And thank you for listening to the GRP.